This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by HuntStand. HuntStand is the number one hunting app in the country, and at only $29.99, HuntStand offers a ton of functionality for hunters all over the country. Whether you own your own property or strictly hunt public, you can choose from over a dozen base maps, view property ownership information, 3D mapping, local weather, log your sightings and harvest, as well as use their trail cam management software, and print maps from your hunt areas. Download it today at the Apple App Store or Google Play. HuntStand. Upgrade your arsenal. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. Welcome back, everybody, and we have one hell of a podcast today. Once again, my buddy Lucas Psycho is on the podcast with us today. I'll tell you what, this guy just gets it done, right? Public land, North Dakota. He fights the same thing that everybody else fights. He fights pressure. He fights sporadic deer movement. But one thing that this dude is really good at is locating deer and making really good moves on them. And he uses his brain, he uses fresh sign, he uses scouting from previous years, he uses knowledge of deer movement from previous years, and he uses basically a Rolodex, a catalog of all this information that he's acquired over the years to make decisions and on where he needs to set up his tree stand. And with that said, he gets it done. Like, the dude just slays big bucks, and he's doing it on public land, and he's doing it in a manner that I wish I could do. Like, I honestly look up to this dude as a hunter, and I wish that I had some of the skills that this guy has. There's a lot of people out there in the hunting industry or out there on social media who think that, you know, they're getting it done. This guy is getting it done, and he's getting it done with limited resources. And I don't know. I just find that very impressive, and that's why I bring him on the show every year, a couple times every year. And I'm going to tell you this right now. This episode is no different, right? It's different because the buck that he killed is different, but the manner in which he did it in is the same kind of, right? He talks about how he identifies sign walking in to a hunt and knowing where to go and where not to go and knowing, you know, how to use terrain to access his tree stand location. Just like all this great information you're going to hear today. And so instead of just basically telling you what the entire episode's going to be about, I'm just going to let Lucas do that for us. But I need a drink of water real quick. Bear with me. Ah, all right. So today we are, we're going to do some commercials real quick. And the first one that we're going to do is Ozonix. Now, I don't know where you guys sit with the with using ozone. You know, a lot of people say, well, I just use woodsmanship and I just play the wind. That's great. You can play the wind all you want. But there are times when even the best hunters who are playing the wind and knowing how to do it, like, bad things happen. And guess what? Deer go downwind of you. And when they go downwind of you, I don't care how many sprays you put on your body, I don't care how good you're playing the wind, you're going to get busted at some point in time. My experience with an Ozonix in the tree is absolutely crazy. I've had encounter after encounter after encounter of deer getting downwind of me, especially if you're trying to hunt fairly aggressive and cutting the wind, that if they get a nose full of Ozonix, if they get a nose full of you, you're done. I don't care. If they get a nose full of Ozonix mixed with you, it in a way confuses them. The science behind what ozone does to odor and the scent cone, it basically just distorts it all. And they're not able to really identify you as a threat. Sometimes they get curious. Sometimes they're just like, I'm just going to keep walking. I kind of put it to this. It's almost like if they were going to smell a tractor or some kind of, I don't know, like a tractor or a car or another scent that doesn't necessarily identify as a threat to them. And I've seen nothing but great results from that. So you can go to ozonixhunting.com and check out, read up on how ozone works, read up on the on all the different options that these guys have. They have some packs available as well, as far as not packs for your back, but discount packs where you can get a discount on a bag or a ozone or generator or their closet or whatever. And I do have a discount code for you guys here. If you want to purchase one of their devices, you will get a free dry wash bag when you enter the discount code NFC21, and that's going to get you a free dry wash bag with a purchase of a unit. Other than that, we got to go on to the next one, and that is Exodus Outdoor Gear. Man, this past week, I went out and I put up some more trail cameras. I put up some more cell cams. The thing I like about the cell cams is there are cell cameras out there where it takes a long time. It's a little bit confusing to set them up. With an Exodus trail camera, all you have to do is download an app and scan a QR code, and you're set up. I mean, it is literally that easy. And then the only thing you have to do is hang them out in the woods in cell phone, with cell phone reception, and you're going to start getting pictures. I have, let's see, right now I think I have three or four cameras out, cell cams out in the woods, sending me back like the most recent information. I have other trail cameras out soaking right now that do not have any cell phone reception. They're just the regular cameras, and I'll check those when I really start to get in the process of hunting. They have a 5-year theft and damage warranty, so if your camera checks out after 4 years, you can take advantage of their warranty. If someone steals it, you can take advantage of their warranty, and you can buy another camera at half the price. So they're really taking care of their customers there. And overall, you just put their cameras out and they work. And really, that's all I want. So Exodus Outdoor Gear.com. And then we have let's see, Excalibur crossbows, it's not too late to pick up a new crossbow for the year. And I'll say this, the learning curve on how to shoot them is really, really short, right? I've shot some crossbows before. I can't use them in the woods here in Iowa because of, you know, the laws in Iowa. But I've shot them before, and to get them sighted in and to get them, you know, in kill mode is shorter than a compound bow, if you're to ask me. So you can get it out and they can, you know, he's got some good distance behind him. There's some power behind him. What I like about Excalibur is the company's been in the industry for a long time. So you're getting a ton of, customer service behind it. You're getting a ton of, evolution and innovation behind the product, and it's not overkill, right? It's a crossbow that gets the job done, and they're durable, and you can beat the shit out of them, and they still perform at a high level. So ExcaliburCrossbow.com, go and check out their new Twin Strike that's currently out. That's two arrows on one crossbow. It's gnarly. And then lastly, one of my absolute favorite products that I use every day, and I use every single season for, I don't even know how many seasons now, it's over like 14 seasons, and that is lonewolfhuntingproducts.com, the Lone Wolf tree stand. I'm a huge fan of the Assault and the Four Sticks, and I'm going to say this, it can get me wherever I need to go. Crooked tree, it can get me in a straight tree, it can get me in a big tree, it can get me in a small tree, a lot of branches, not very many branches. It gets me in the right tree. And sometimes 5 yards, 10 yards can mean the difference of a big buck. And that's why I choose Lone Wolf as my mobile setup for my hunting. So lonewolfhuntingproducts.com. If you do decide to purchase anything from their website, enter the discount code, where's it at here? 9FC21, 9FC21, and you're going to get a discount of $50 off of all purchases over $200. So that can be anywhere from 18 to 25% off, just depending on what you purchase. And I'm telling you right now, it is a good deal. So take advantage of that. All right, I've poured out. We're done. Let's get into today's episode with Lucas Psycho. 3, 2, 1. All right. All the way from North Dakota, my friend, Lucas Psycho. Lucas, what's up, man?
Oh, not much, man. Just got done with the work week.
Yeah.
Get the bullshit with you for a bit, you know, end the week on a good note, talk some beers.
Heck yeah.
You know, get myself jacked up for what tags I got left for the year.
What tags do you have left for this year?
So I do have a rifle tag. For North Dakota, it's in a completely different unit than I generally hunt, but it's gonna be a good one. It's gonna be like a little bit of an adventure hunt. Go hunt some stuff that I generally don't hunt off very much.
Yeah.
So a lot different terrain. It's gonna be hunting whitetails and like a lot of mule deer country.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Specifically, so there's this where whitetails and muleys hang out. So. It'll look like if anybody's seen Donnie Vincent's, the Rivers Divide one.
Yeah.
That one where he hunts that deer in North Dakota in the Badlands. So I'll be hunting stuff like that.
Okay.
It looks identical to that. So if it gives anybody an idea. So just changing it up. Me and Jen, my wife, we both drew that tag.
Awesome.
So got that. That starts November 6th. And then I'm going to try to skip out to Minnesota and possibly Wisconsin, actually. It just depends on how it all lays out. But, you know, towards the end of the October here. And then if I have to, I might skip back out to Minnesota if I still have a tag and try to kill one with the muzzleloader in Minnesota if I still have the tag. So,
okay.
That's Montana. Didn't draw anything in Montana. And so
is that there, but. Is that North Dakota rifle tag good for muley or whitetail, or just whitetail?
Nope. This one will just be whitetail. Although my dad did draw a mule deer tag, so I'm gonna be running around with him. So he's gonna be trying to take out a muley buck with his rifle, and yeah. And he's essentially just been hunting mule deer this year, so he's gonna have a real good idea, he's had some close calls already this year. There's been some pretty cool hunts I went on with him a couple of times. And
yeah,
so we're getting pretty excited to get after some mule deer this year too.
What's the mule deer? I'm going to South Dakota on Friday of this upcoming week. So actually when this podcast launches, I'll be in a car heading west to South Dakota for mule deer. What's the North Dakota mule deer situation like?
It's actually doing real well. It's doing real well. I think the numbers are up real good. As opposed to right now, and you know, this is just a good segue into what we were talking about earlier,
yeah,
Dan, with the EHD. We have EHD going on up here right now, and it's just taking a toll on everything in my area right now. There's just, I'm getting reports of 70% and 80% deer herd loss on some of these guys' places around here. And
no shit.
And you know, yeah, it's bad. It extends into Montana from North Dakota here, you know, up both river valleys, Missouri and the Yellowstone. I guess they're just terrible. The harvest is going on up here, sugar beets and everything like that. And just in the past week and a half, I've just been hearing left and right and getting pictures of this deer, you know, all these dead deer. And it's just insane, man.
Yeah.
I share hunting a little private place, over here in North Dakota, not far from my house. And with another guy, and he said he drove down into that place the other day, and he said it smelled like a death zone in there.
Jeez.
So I was like, geez. So, and then across the river from that, he said that him and his brother, they farm over there. They found over 80 deer dead already in just a few days, went right before that. So
dang.
It's bad, man.
It's,
we got a drought going on up here like no other. I mean, it is bad.
That sucks.
So,
that really sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yep. Have you witnessed? I mean, with your time in the woods already this year, have you witnessed a lot of dead deer, like coming to and from your stands, or checking trail cameras, or just scouting, or anything?
I only ran into a couple myself.
Yeah.
Because I only hunted for that first 2 weeks, you know, and then I tagged out. So, you know. All throughout that, when season opened on the 3rd, it was just a few here and there. And it was kind of like, well, maybe it's not going to be as bad as, you know, some places are getting it. And then it progressively got real, real bad quick here in the river bottoms. And then it's not just in the river bottoms. There's the hill country to the south and the north, and it's kind of spotty, you know, all over the place. But there's some areas that I think the deer herds are just getting decimated, like they're wiping them out, like in some of these spots. Like, I don't know if there's gonna be very many left right there.
Dang. It's so, it's crazy.
Yeah,
how
it's a bummer.
It's crazy how that works too, because my stepbrother, he found 20, he was getting ready to go fish a pond one day, and he found 22, mm-hmm. This is no joke, 22 dead deer in a pond, and that they were all recent, like right around, they were all dead right around the edge of the pond. And that's a lot, right? And so
that's insane. Yeah.
So your buddy's finding them, you're finding them.
Yep.
And every time that I hear this, and this is crazy, for me, every time I hear we've been hit by EHD, right? So then I go out and I do my normal March shed hunting that I go and do, but I never find any. I'm not finding the results of an EHD kill, if that makes sense. So I'm not finding these deadheads all over the place. So I don't know, unless they're going down to the river and they're getting washed out with floods and they're getting buried in mud or something, or they're just crawling into holes that I'm not seeing them in. But I personally am not witnessing what others have said that there has been in the past. So I don't know.
I think they die in relatively easy places for people to find them. So I think that's why you don't find them very much. Cause I think if anything's worth picking up I think people get them.
Like
if you're not out there, I think while it's happening, I don't know if you will see a lot of them,
yeah.
You know, cause I think they die in relatively pretty high, you know, traffic areas, like right out in some fields or, you know, in some ditches or, you know, some little pond areas or, you know, right along little rivers and creeks and stuff like that. And then in the big rivers, you know, my dad was telling me about it. He was driving down the river the other day, and here's a deer floating right down the river.
Dang.
You know, And so, yeah. And you know, and we've seen a couple of them right along the river, you know, laying dead on the bank. And it's terrible, man. But you know what's crazy is the mule deer, though. I haven't actually heard of or seen one picture from anybody of a mule deer getting taken out by it, because apparently they're just not as susceptible to it. Huh. You know, I think they must have, I haven't really read into it, but I'm just guessing. I would assume they probably have adapted to it or something, you know, and mule deer live in that, you know, up in the drier kind of like, you know, desolate areas and stuff like that. So I don't know if they kind of live in somewhat of a, you know, a drought, you know, a drought like area, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's just kind of how they've already, you know, they've gotten used to living with it maybe.
Well, you know, or they're not down in the bottoms. You know, like the whitetails, they're out in the bottoms. They're in the mud where that midge lives, right? They're in the river bottoms, the wetter places where that midge would live. And this is my limited experience on mule deer. They're up in that higher hill country, and they don't have, it's almost like they don't need water like a whitetail needs water. They get it off the plants or maybe from a cattle tank instead. So I don't know.
Right. No, that's very true. That's very true. Cause some of these areas that me and my dad have been running around in here, all them old stock ponds and those cattle ponds that the ranchers have up here and stuff, everything's dry. Everything's dried up and gone. And so there's literally no wetness to it.
Yeah.
So it's like, it is fascinating, like how they even live up in that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, where are you getting this water at? You know? But I'm sure it's a combination of all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right, so EHD has hit pretty hard. As as this summer, you know, you start to, did you have an idea that EHD was hitting as you were going out and doing your summer scouting and doing your trail cameras and things like that? Were you getting the idea that, you know, something about the population was off?
It was, well, no, because it generally hits like, you know, mid to late August. You know, or in September, you know, so all the way up through, you know, when I start hanging cameras, you know, and doing any scouting at all, like mid July, you know, everything was looking fantastic. Everything sounded great. Everything was looking great. You know, I was getting lots of deer on cameras and all that stuff and seeing lots of deer. And, you know, right before season started to hear the first couple cases, you know, popping up right before season started. Like it was like the last week of August when I first kind of really heard of it. Kind of taken off, and then I kind of got nervous about it, and then I knew, you know, until we're a ways away from getting the frost generally, just because it's been warm here, you know, and we've had one morning with any frost that I've seen, and that was the morning of September 17th when I shot my deer, and it wasn't a heavy frost because it only frosted down in the low-lying areas of the timber where there was no canopy, and it was in them low-lying areas, which is where you want it to be frost. Where you want it to frost is that stuff. You want it to frost that hard to kill them bugs off, and the larvae or whatever they call it, the midge. But it has to be a good hard frost, and I think you need something that's literally frosting everything, you know, not just these, you know, little low-lying areas in the woods and stuff. So I don't know. It looks like, you know, we're looking like probably the next 10 to 14 days, we're still not getting anything that looks to be a sure frost. I think we get down to like 30, 32 or 33 next week sometime is all. And I mean, we need something to hit like, you know, 28, 30, you know, something like that and kind of be like that for a few nights in a row, I think is what we really need.
Yeah.
But
so as you were, you know, as you were starting your trail camera inventory, you know, things were looking good, right? So kind of getting back into the positives of this hunting strategy and how you play. Just out of curiosity, how many acres are you covering of the public land that you hunt, throwing your trail cameras out, getting an inventory of what bucks are where and what deer are looking good to you?
Acreage. I think I did a guesstimation and I'm not, I can't quite remember what the acreage coverage is, but it's huge, right? It's, you know, probably 15,000, you know, acres plus probably of just, you know, mix and match public pieces here and there, you know, and it's all throughout the river bottoms here. And some outside of the river bottoms too, up on top in the hill country. But I had, you know, we did a lot of glassing on top of just the trail cameras this year, you know. And that was actually opening night. I was after a different deer that I didn't shoot, and it was because me and my dad glassed him up. We drove down the river one evening, and then we went to a spot and glassed from a distance on a field that is generally pretty good in the early season, and I spotted a deer that I tried to kill the previous year in that spot in the early season, and he turned into an absolute giant, and not as in scoring giant, but just a beast, old 7.5, 8.5 year old deer, big tank, eight, all the character in the world on him. And so I went after him, and I had him at 40 yards two nights in a row, opening night and the second night, and just wasn't comfortable with the shots. He was kind of in some thicker stuff, and the wind was blowing a bit, and it just didn't feel right. And actually, the whole time I thought I was going to get a lot closer shot than that anyways. Well, he ended up slipping by, you know, did what a big deer did. He stayed right in the thick stuff, perfect, right out of range, you know, got by.
Yeah.
And so I gave that spot a break, and in the meantime, all this VHD starts picking up even more, you know. You know, after opening weekend, it just kind of picks up more and more.
Yeah.
People are finding more deer. So I start to go, well, I don't know if this is the year to dedicate to anything, you know, one specific deer.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, what are the odds, you know, I'm going to run into, you know, anything else that I want to shoot anyways right now. So I kind of wanted to just expand, you know, my options. So I started hunting other spots here and there, and checking out some other areas, doing some observation sits and whatnot. And come to the 17th, and there was an area that me and my dad had seen, you know, I don't know, four or five looked like really good bucks, came out a couple of times in an area and got a decent look at them, but nothing great, you know, to verify what they were. So I thought I'd go and check out one. I think it was the couple days. It was the week prior to that. So it would have been like the 12th or 13th. I went out and hung some trail cameras on a kind of like an old dry waterbed bayou kind of area, right not too far from the fields that these deer were going to feed in. And I did that because I could go and find where all these deer are crossing this, where this was kind of dried up, and you could find the trails that were crossing that when it was soft.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I could pinpoint the travel, at least to where they were going, to what part of the timber. And so I basically just, I've hunted that place so much. Typically, I mean, for instance, back when I was hunting that deer HVI a couple of years ago, I had that place picked apart for 2 years. I hunted that place almost exclusively, so I knew every little thing about the whole thing, the whole area. And so just based off of those trails, I knew right where I needed to be. So I was like, all right, next weekend looks like it's going to get good. I'll go out there and I'll check it out. So I had that Friday off. I headed out there. I had to make about a mile and just over a mile, kind of a half circle, kind of make a half circle to get in behind where those deer were. And I set up, and I thought I was going to see a hell of a lot more deer just based off the deer sign. And I don't know if that was because some of the HD had already been taking a toll there or not. You know, I didn't know that, but I only seen three deer, and I shot the third one. You know, and it was a really good eight. He came out, he did exactly what, you know, deer in that area have done in the past. I mean, it was to a T, right? Exactly what I wanted, you know, was looking for, you know. And he came out, and I couldn't let him go because he was a freaking tank, man. He was a 7.5 year old 4x4, and just a giant tank of a body.
Yeah.
And when I first see him and I was filming it, I curse, right? I mean, I'm all jacked up. It just comes out. It's who I am, you know?
Yep.
And I just go, this, I think, look at this effer, I say, or something like that. And I'm like, look at this effer, here he comes, you know? And because I didn't think anything was going to show up because it was so late in the morning after everything had kind of settled down. And, And he came in, and I made a perfect shot, you know, just crushed him at about 42 yards, and he died about 50 yards from where I shot him. And you know, looking back on it, man, I mean, it's like, I can't even believe how lucky that was. Like, just to not only, you know, have that workout with, like, no prior scouting, at least this year, right, in that area, you know, and then just to get a deer before all these damn deer dying, you know, it was, because it's getting so bad. So, yeah, needless to say, it just worked out pretty slick.
Yeah. So a lot of guys want to be this mobile hunter, right? But especially if they're breaking away from this sedentary type of hunting where they go, they do their scouting, and then they set up, and then that's where they go all the time. As you were walking in, what were you looking for? You already mentioned the trails in the dry, like the dry water beds there, but what else were you looking for as you were working your way in, looking for a specific tree for an ambush point?
So there was probably about 100-yard stretch north and south. So the deer travel is east and west, and there was about 100 yards north and south line, right, that crossing area, right, with that deer traffic that I was curious that, all right, I think it's going to be in this area. This is where I want to be, somewhere within this 100 yards that I got to be.
Yeah.
And I really settled on the tree that I had hung a tree stand in a couple of years ago for my wife's rifle tag. And because you could see a lot, and it sat up over all these cattails and everything. And I thought, you know what? It's kind of tough to see what's going on because it was so dry back there. Normally it's wetter, so you can kind of distinguish what the traffic is better. And so it was so dry that the trails and traffic and tracks and everything just weren't showing up very well. And so I just kind of settled on this has always been a good pinch point. I shot, I don't know, 3 or 4 deer within, you know, 150 yards of this spot, you know, in that little general triangle in there. And so I thought, you know, this has historically just been so good. I can see all the way down this way. I can see all the way down this way, you know, and I have a great chance to kill because this has always been a great funnel right here. It's always been good. And so I was like, all right, I'm killing all the birds with one stone tonight. You know, this morning I can see all the way down there. I got a good kill scenario too, possibly. And, you know, if I see them, I can make a move on them another time, you know? So that's essentially what I was looking for, was just that was like I said, it was like a kill set, but it was more so an observation set, you know? I felt good that I have a chance to kill, but it was more so, I just want to get a look at everything and see what's happening, you know?
But you put yourself in a position though, to where not only you could see, but somewhere between, like, this was a morning, right? So they were coming. What was he doing? Was he coming off of like a big ag field or a pasture, or was he like hitting some acorns and then working his way back to some kind of bedding area?
Yeah, they were coming from some big cornfields.
Okay.
Yeah, there were some big cornfields out to the west, and I was probably half mile back from the field edge, probably straight line shot from where they came from. And they make that trek relatively quickly most times, but this deer, I don't know, you know, he came through so late. I think it was like 8:40 or something in the morning, and it'd been light for, you know, an hour and a half or something like that already, 2 hours almost. And I was already thinking that, you know, I'd seen everything I was going to see.
Yeah.
And I just decided to hang out a little longer. And then here he comes. And I just seen his racks show up in the bright sunlight up against that big willow patch out in front of me, and I was like, holy cow, here we go. I guess here we go, we got one coming here, you know. And
so you set up, I mean, you pretty much set up on fresh sign, like trails. Did you notice any rubs or scrapes walking in that area as well?
No, and to be honest, I thought I was going to be covered in moose more than anything, because the moose sign was the heaviest in there.
Yeah.
And that can be tough around here. Like moose can almost dominate, you know, all of the sign area. Like it can just wash out like even just deer travel. It just sometimes it just looks like there's all there is moose here, but deer are actually traveling through that area, you know? it can get confusing sometimes. And sometimes you're thinking you're hunting a deer, and here you're hunting a moose travelway, a corridor, you know, that they've been running up and down, you know, because it's about, you know, their mating season is right, you know, mid September.
Oh, okay.
So up here, and so, you know, it can be a little tricky, but you know, most of that hunt came off of prior knowledge of the area, you know, most of it. And then basically that week before when I verified where these deer are heading back into the timber, you know,
and that was from glassing, right?
Yeah. Well, so I glassed them up. Right. And then when I went and checked out the week prior down in that little mud flat, I was able to verify where all these trails were crossing that going back into all the willows. There's a big willow bar there on the way back to where I killed them. And all I had to do was see is, all right, now I see there's a very good significant amount of deer travel heading in this direction, you know? And so it was kind of just like, put it all together. All right, they're going to end up somewhere back along this edge, you know, this open area back here in these cattails. So I'm going to just go and pop myself up. And I had that tree in my head as I was walking in, right? I was thinking that is a possibility to sit that one. But I kind of, you know, scouted my way in that last 100, 150 yards, kind of picking through there, seeing what it looks like. But, you know, it was just a gut feeling more than anything. It was like, yeah, just sit this tree.
Yeah.
You know, just sit this one, you know?
Okay.
So
in the past, you know, you kill deer, you kill your bow buck just about any time of year, right? I think the last 2 years were November? Or was one October?
So last year was October 2nd.
Okay, October 2nd.
Yep. And then I've shot it's probably, you know, September, October, November.
Yeah.
Are essentially the months that I kill in, and it's, there's really no rhyme or reason to any of it, you know. It's I bet it's, if I was to really figure it all out, I bet you'd be pretty evenly distributed, you know, 30% in each, probably 30-some percent.
So let me ask you this. What are the factors that get you in the woods, right? Whether it's, you know, it's like, okay, the time is now to get out there in September, or the time is now in October or November or whenever. How do you know, how do you make your decision on when to get into the woods and really put in the time to get the, like to start patterning and get on them?
For me, that's as simple as, when do I have time to get out there? Number one, yeah. Right? So with, you know, you and I both know with families, it's tough, you know, and then the older your kids get in the sports, like mine are now, you know, it's even that much more limited. So, I almost go when I have time anymore, you know, I almost go, it doesn't even matter. I'm going, like, if it's hot, I don't care. I have too many areas. I may not go to the prime spot, you know, the ones that I'm like, yeah, kind of iffy on, like, I really don't want to waste it on, you know, maybe this warmer weather or whatever, this wrong wind or something. I don't, you know, I'm going to wait on front, you know, when it cools down. That's one of the main ones for me, is when it cools down, you know, and just with all the ground I hunt, I can go just about any time I have a chance, regardless of where the wind is blowing, because right. I can figure it out one way or the other in all these areas, and that's I think that's what's why I'm so successful, is because I go so much when most people maybe not go, you know, and it just, yep. I think my opportunity is just that much higher than a lot of people's,
yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of times first sit, you know, it's a lot yeah. of time first sit in, you know, and when you do that enough, I think your odds just go up. And you don't, you know, a lot of people don't have that opportunity, though. You know, they don't have access to, you know, this amount of public land, or, you know, or just a couple of, you know, good sized private chunks or anything that you could do stuff like that. You know, here I have that ability, you know, so. Yeah.
And it sounds to me like what you have acquired over all of your years of scouting, over all of the years of hunting this public, is almost like an index or a Rolodex of places in your head where it's like, okay, I have the ability to hunt. It's hot. or it's cold, or it's September, or it's a north wind, or it's raining, or if it's a southwest wind, or whatever the current conditions are, or the water level's high, or the water level's low, or whatever, you have this Rolodex in your head that it just automatically goes click, 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 click. All these numbers are aligned, and it yep. outputs a place where you feel that you need to be.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it, you know, and that's exactly what happens, you know, when you're sitting in the office at work, right? And you got some spare time and you're just kind of sitting there. I'm going to pop up Onyx and the weather app, and then boom, I can pick. I got a handful of places based off of what, you know, the forecasts for the weekend or something. And I can go, all right, I can go this night and go this morning. All right, here's these four spots are optional. Oh, yeah, it's a little wet yet. I can't get back there. Or it's a little drier. That's always good when that's drier. You know, like you said it perfect.
Yeah.
You know, water levels, everything, wind directions, you know, all that stuff. When it's raining, or, you know, or whether it's windy, you know, it, whether it's a, you know, a weekend day or just a weekday, because, you know, that changes everything too with the public land, because there's quite a bit of pressure around here. And so, you know, all of that comes into play. And that, and actually that sit that morning, I wasn't going to go there. Because I actually thought Saturday as opposed to Friday was going to be a better weather condition for back there. But I changed my mind because it was Friday. And I thought, I'm going to have that public piece probably to myself tomorrow morning. Saturday morning, I could have guys running around all over.
Yeah.
So I was like, nope, I'm going to go there first. And then I'm going to go to this other spot that's super tough to get to on Saturday, because there won't be anybody there Saturday regardless. More than likely, there won't be nobody there.
Yeah.
You know, this was a spot that was much more likely having some public pressure. So that's kind of how I determined that too, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this then. You mentioned you're kind of just holding out. You got all these, you know, responsibilities with work and with the kids. And you like to try to find the cool temperatures or maybe a front that comes through. But what about warm weather? Because it's early season, you know, it's already October, but still October can produce some pretty hot temps.
Yep.
Like, how does hot weather play into your equation?
If it's like 95 plus or 100, there's a good chance I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, there's a very good chance. If it's 90 or less, and if it's cooling off relatively quickly in the evening, I will go sit like a 90 degree day, you know, depending on what it is. And that may not be something that, is extremely, I guess, aggressive. It might be something that's more like, I'll just be able to catch a glimpse of where something's coming through. And then I'll just get some intel essentially, you know,
right.
Get it right at last light, probably not even going to kill. You're just going to more get an eye on something. And then you're just hunting and, you know, as much as we love this shit, it's like, I don't care. I'm just sitting in a tree. I'm happy, you know?
Right.
So, you know, but this year, I mean, this year it was, I think it was like 80 degrees, I think, opener. And, you know, we were going and I had that buck, that big dude, I had him. I think I sent you a video of it or text of it, I think, didn't I?
I'd have to check it.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, I had him running around, you know, an hour before dark, you know, right in front of my tree. So, you know, it's I'd much rather hunt a morning than an evening in early season, which is really kind of backwards, is, you know, from what a lot of people like to hunt across the Midwest.
Yeah.
I actually, you know, up here. Yeah.
I actually just did an interview for, at bowhunting.com. About that. And it's funny, out of all of the people they interviewed, only one guy said that hunting mornings was overrated this time of year. Then there was, I think, three out of the four that said it's actually underrated. Like, but the whole premise of that article was exactly what you just said, how, dude, a long time ago, Summerin wrote an article about hunting mornings was stupid or bad. And it's just, I'm like, but all these serious guys are saying, no, that's not the case. Statistically, you probably have a better chance in the evenings, but if you can pattern a deer and you can get this, you know, get this buck coming back off food, and you have a great access route, whether it's in a pinch point or even in a bedding area or in a staging area coming off of a food source, hell, go for it.
Yeah, of course, man. And I mean, access is probably the number one thing you know, that you got to take into account for hunting a morning, you know. If you just have no way to get in behind where you know, where they're feeding and try to cut them off or be waiting for them where you expect them to be bedding, you know, I would say not even waste your time. But if you got an access way through either the side door or the back door and the wind, and you got the good wind directions, and you can, you know, there's ways to do it, man. There's ways to get in there and get out without even being noticed, even if you don't kill one. Right. You know, there's ways to do it. It's just it's hard to even explain, right? It is. It's super hard to explain. You know, if I'm hunting a deer that I don't want to spook at all, like if I'm just like, I really do not want to mess this up, I'll still go hunt in the morning, but it may be he's going to come by with a crosswind or almost a quartering wind that's almost good for him, you know, going into his face just a slightly or just across, where he's going to feel good about it. And when he crosses where I feel like he's coming, he's not going to win me once he gets past me, you know, because he might come through it, you know, 20 minutes before legal shooting light. That's happened to me. I don't know how many times. I could, you know, way more times than I can, you know, even count. Yeah. You know, that's probably happened to me way more than anything. And so to try to alleviate that thing that from ruining it, you know, I just always try to hunt where I can get up to that spot, get up into that area. I hunt, either he comes through and I can kill him, or he comes through or he doesn't come through. I just don't know. Right. Sometimes you don't know, but I feel like where he's coming through, my wind never gets to a position where he could win me, you know? And even when I'm leaving, I just got a good exit route. I don't have to go anywhere near where I think he's bedding. I can basically go in and straight back out almost the same way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And,
let me ask you this. What was this buck doing in relationship to the wind? And because I had a conversation with a guy about this earlier today, and he's like, you know, mm-hmm. you hear another, I guess it's almost like a myth. You hear people talk about, oh, the deer are walking right into the wind. They're always going to walk right into the wind. And
that's false. Yeah. I mean, from what I've seen. That's
Dude, I see deer walk with their wind straight to their back all the time. And it's not all the mm-hmm. time, but I mean, like, for every time I see a deer walk head into wind, I see a deer walk straight away with the wind to his back, right?
Yeah.
So
it's probably that same damn deer, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, see exactly.
The same deer do something exactly the opposite of what he just did.
Yeah.
You know?
What did that buck do before you shot him? Did he have his wind quartering towards you or what?
That day it was... That was a straight out of the north. That was a northwest, real light drifting wind. So he would have came from the northwest with the wind out of his back. Yep.
Yeah.
So he came with the wind at his back. Now, the one thing I have noticed is that their demeanor is a little bit different sometimes, you know, and it depends on where they're at. You know, I do notice deer be a little more calm when they got the wind in their face. You know?
Yeah.
I have noticed, kind of taken note of that. But then again, I've seen deer walk all willy-nilly just with the wind blowing at their back. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. You know, I don't know. I feel like it has more to do with what is the state of where they're living. Like, what kind of pressure have they been seeing and having on them? What, you know, has anybody been in that area and leaving any scent, you know, at all, you know? If they've been pretty much left alone and you can catch them early season before anybody else has been in there, them deer almost act like there isn't anything out there that can kill them.
Yeah.
It's weird, you know? But the first time, you know, that's where up here, I always make the joke like, you got one chance, you know, like somebody wants to get aggressive on this, on a particular deer. I always say, well, you got one good chance. If you're going to go in there, like you're going to go in there, you know, how you want to do it. Like, you got that one chance. You better make sure it's right, because He's going to know you're right. He's going to be on to you as soon as you, because, you know, I've some guys have asked about, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. And I'm like, you have a good chance of killing him, but if you don't kill him, you've now left scent right in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
You're not leaving yourself any leeway, you know, which by all means, you know, that's sometimes what a guy has to do. Sometimes you just gotta go for it,
yeah.
You know, and just hope for the best, you know?
So everybody thinks that early season, deer are for some strange reason back in their beds before the sun is even up yet, right? They think I don't know. Why do you think that this buck that you shot this year was up on his feet 2 hours still after heading back to bed after daylight?
I think there wasn't a soul back there this year. I think where I was the first human intrusion since shed season. I would bet that is exactly why he was meandering around back there, because 2 years ago when I shot that big one, like literally 150 yards just behind that spot to the east, I snuck in there and shot that deer after he got up out of his bed an hour and a half before dark that evening. And he walked right through there. He was walking through relatively open timber as if he had, you know, it was, he had no idea that there would be a person back there at that time of year, you know? And so I think if you can be the first one in on top of something like that, I think you literally are going to have your way with it until you screw it up yourself.
Yeah.
You know? And so with that, it's make it count, you know? If you're going to go in there, you know, just have it planned out at least somewhat, so that, because one big problem is guys will get this big idea and they'll go all the way back into something like that, and they haven't quite thought through where they want to be. They think they're going to just scout it around in the dark and figure it out. Good luck, dude. You're going to look at 500 trees in there. You're going to walk
yeah.
200 yards this way and 100 yards this way, and you're going to leave scent everywhere and get in a panic and frustrated and pissed off. And I know this because I've done it.
Yeah,
I've done that. You know, I've done that more times than I care to even tell anybody about. And then just completely ruin the whole area and have a shitty hunt. And then now I'm like, all right, that place screwed for, you know, at least 2 weeks, you know? And so it's, have a plan, you know, have a general idea, like where you want to be, at least just a general idea. And then when you go in there, every step you take, you can almost mark off that stuff you just walked over. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. I always try to just don't go so far to where you've just screwed everything. Yeah. Leave yourself something new. Leave yourself something new ahead of you or off to the side of you, that if you got to make a J hook to just get around some big, you know, crossing area or any kind of, you know, funnel way or whatever it might be, or just a big open pocket that's like, well, that's where I want to be able to shoot something, is right through there. So, you know, just make a circle. Do that. Don't just beeline right to where you want to be, because, you know, you might have to let 4 or 5 deer walk past your set before the big dude shows up. Well, if they walk across your scent, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, and then there goes your whole hunt, you know, so.
And not just for
doing little things like that seem to matter the most, you know?
Yeah. And not just for those deer, but for the other deer that you may not have seen, because, you know, if a different group of deer says, all right, well, we're heading back to bed early, or we got to get through this area before there's any type of human intrusion, or they just bump and they go someplace else. That's a really awesome observation and great point that you brought up, was the deer were comfortable because they currently weren't hunted back there, and they were just kind of chilling, right? Taking their time getting back to their bed. There was no rush for them to get back there. And then you come in, you seal the deal, but if there's this, now the pressure starts to build up on them, and now they start going, okay, tweak, now we're nocturnal, and then the whole thing's over.
Yep. Yeah, and that might just be what does it, right?
Yeah.
And it's not always going to be that case, right? Nope. I've seen deer walk right over my path, right? Because, I mean, when I walk in, if I cross any big mud hole areas, moose shit or piss or wallows or anything, like, I'm stepping in it all. I got rubber boots on. I think that type of stuff works for covering your scent, and then they're just making deer feel calm and they're not too worried about that scent, because I think moose are one of those things that I think help me and guys that hunt around these areas, or anybody that hunts with, moose in the area, is that they just leave so much noise. They make so much noise, they leave so much sign, they break so many branches and stuff like that when they're moving around. So I think that you can get away with a lot of stuff if you're just smart about it. And so, I've seen deer come through and, they walk right across where I walked in, and it's like, all right, cool, that worked. And they didn't spook, just try not to just feel as though anything you touch is going to leave scent. If you can if you go in there and you're just, plowing through everything and you're not picking your way through here, step on logs instead of big patchy grass and stuff like that. Anywhere you can touch harder surfaces, I feel like you're just not leaving as much scent,
Yeah.
So any dirt, if you can walk on dirt, stay out of the grass, because the grass is brushing up on your legs and everything like that, and it's grabbing scent, and I think it holds scent better. So there's a bunch of little things like that, I don't really notice I do until somebody's with me and they're like, why are you doing, why'd you do that? What'd you do this for? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't even think about it now,
yeah.
And then I get to explain why I did it, but there's just all these little nuances that I think all add up, and give a guy just that little bit more edge, a little bit more edge, confidence.
Yeah.
So
for what advice would you give? And you've talked about a little bit about this already, but let's say there's a guy, he's like, okay, I've heard Dan talk about it. I've heard Lucas talk about it. I've heard other guys who, we're not the big names, but we're relatively successful on a consistent basis these days.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I personally haven't killed an early season whitetail. I don't think ever, right? But I've hunted, I've had good encounters. I just haven't killed, right? Here you are, killed.
You're talking October early season?
Yeah, I'm talking like this September, okay. Yeah. the early season October time frame, where a guy, yep, has typically stayed out of the woods. What advice would you give to him if he goes, all right, man, that's enough. I'm going to start hunting mornings in October. Any caution tales, any strategy, anything like that, or tips that you've learned over the years that you might want to share with us?
Number one, I would just locate something you want to hunt, right? Yeah. Locate something you're interested in, whether that's just a group of deer, you're like, I don't really care, I just want to be able to go out and see some deer, have a chance at something. It all depends on what the guy wants, right? Or gal, what do you want? A big buck? Do you want, or do you just want to go and just have a chance at some deer? And, number one, figure out that part, right? Figure out what the hell it is you want, and go find that. I don't care how you figure that out. Glass, cameras, word of mouth, sometimes people will just tell you, yeah, there's a shit pile of deer coming out right back in this field back here. Oh, cool. Can I go hunt them? Yeah, go for it. So,
right.
That I've seen that happen many times. So, but however you figure that out. Then figure out, all right, if I want to hunt mornings, how the hell am I going to get in behind those deer? And across the Midwest, you might have to ask the neighbors, hey, I don't want to hunt your place. I just want to walk into this place over here. And I think a lot of people will let you just cross their property. If you honestly just walk up and knock on their door and tell them just be cool about it, and I think most people will say, yeah, that'll be okay, because I think a lot of people don't hunt early season like we've spoken about, so they're not really too worried that so and so is going to go and, well, whatever, they're going to just go put pressure on their stuff and push it all over to us. Cool, that might be something what they're thinking. So, number one, figure out how you can get in there behind them, because you have to. There's no other way. You're not walking through the field to go hunt, them deer,
yeah,
that are in that field.
There's got to be an access change, right? Access route change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You either come from the side door or the back door.
Yep.
You got to have one way or the other. And so once you figure that out, and And typically, if you have a water source that you can use for your entrance, whether it's, you know, a canoeing or a kayaking or using a trolling motor on a canoe or a little boat, you know, do that. Like that is one of the best ways that you know, for me, if I didn't have a boat and I wasn't using the boat, I'd have way less deer, you know, on my wall. Way less deer, you know. Yeah. So it's not as simple as just using the boat. It's you gotta have a plan. You gotta have some sort of a strategy, you know. So and I think for somebody just starting is draw a straight line from that food source to where you think they possibly could be bedding. Draw a straight line to that thing and hunt that straight line. Start there.
Yep.
You know, hunt that transition area. You know, if there's a straight line through that spot where it opens up and you can see up and down, you know, perpendicular to that, go hunt that spot. Now you're going to get a good chance at maybe killing something, plus maybe get some intel on something moving through.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Try to just hedge all your bets, all, you know, and just give yourself that opportunity to at least see what's going on. Don't go and just, you know, I think some people think that they got to get right into the thickest, nastiest stuff. And that's because that's the only place big bucks will walk, right? And they put themselves there and they don't see shit because, you know, them deer are much more relaxed early season. So they don't feel like they got to barricade themselves into a thicket that you can't hardly walk through, you know? So them deer will lay right in the middle of the grass, you know, grassy area right up against a log or something, you know, in a wide open timber, you know, a big buck will, you know, this time of year. So it's more or less like I said, figure out what you want to hunt, where that's at, figure out some access ways and just get after it.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And
you may not be successful the first year, but you're going to know something. You're going to learn every time you go,
right.
You know, and try to find multiple spots to do that on. If you can do that multiple times in an early season and just learn from them, you're going to definitely become a better deer hunter just from that experience alone.
Yeah.
You know, just that knowledge you'll find just from putting yourself in that situation.
So, but kind of backing up a second, the only reason you hunted mornings in that scenario is because you had intel of deer working their way off of a field back into that bedding, right? You had intel.
Yep.
Yep. So that was for you. This wasn't like a, hey, I'm going in blind type scenario.
Mm-hmm. And you know, so I used kind of like a, I didn't necessarily use a back door on this. So what had happened is where I hunted these deer, you have to drive between two fields where they're feeding to get to a parking area, right? Well, in the past, I've learned it doesn't matter if you drive across that road. Most of them deer don't even pay attention to that vehicle. They're not even looking at it. They don't even care. So what happens is I ended up about, I don't know, quarter to a half mile south of where I figured most of the deer were feeding out in them fields. But I was out of sight from them once I got to where I was parked. So basically I had to, like I said, I basically took the same direction, you know, going west to east, you know, walked way in, and then I had to hook way north, you know, back to the north to get back in line with where those deer would generally be going back into the timber.
Right.
So it doesn't always have to be something where you're coming from behind somewhere. You just got to be able to get far enough away where you're not going to bother them, or you could park and you could walk straight in, you know, and then just make a hook back in, you know.
Yeah. You got to get in front of
behind
them.
And,
yeah.
Yep, you just got to cut them off, right? Yep. I mean, and essentially it's really that basic,
yeah.
You know?
So
it's not that complicated.
So this time of year, if you don't have intel, though, or you, let's mm-hmm. say the intel of trail camera pics or a deer, you found a deer through glassing, whatever, are you hunting blind in the mornings?
Yeah, I've done it many times. Yep.
Yeah.
And if it's that first sit, I might sit, like I said, in a spot where I can see a little better. Maybe I can see 100 yards this way and 60 yards this way.
Yeah.
You know, and then put myself in a position where, all right, I'm going to at least learn something today. And it might be where I can sit on the end of an opening with my wind blowing out that same end so that I can look all the way down that opening and get an idea of what's crossing. And then I see them cross. I back out of there once the hunt's over. Now I know, all right, I got to go all the way up to that next big tree that sticks out and they cross right in there. That's where I'm going to set up the next time I go in, you know? And
yeah,
I think that's my favorite type of hunting right there is seeing them do something, go right back in after them and plan on them being right there again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's about as good of a kill situation as there is. That's yeah. the type of stuff that keeps you up at night. Like, I can't wait to wake up and go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. know? Well, I yeah. tell you what, man, Lucas, first off, congrats on this year's buck again, Slayer. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day and good luck the rest of the season, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Dan. You know, hey, I'll be pulling for you. You going after the mule deer down in South Dakota. I was hoping and waiting just for this picture when you were down there earlier.
Yeah.
Was it South Dakota or Nebraska?
I was in Nebraska, in September.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So now you're going to South Dakota though?
Yeah. South Dakota now. Yep.
Oh, okay. Ah, sweet. Sweet. Yeah. A buddy of mine just tagged out down there like this past week on a muley.
Awesome.
So, yeah, tough hunting, but it'll be fun.
And there you have it. Huge shout out to Lucas. Appreciate your time, man. Congratulations as always. And then on top of that, please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. We have Wasp, Vortex, Hunt Stand, Ozonix, Lone Wolf, Excalibur Crossbows, and Exodus Trail Cameras. Please go out and support those companies. And what else? Instagram, Facebook. Make sure you're following the Nine Finger Chronicles. Go to iTunes or wherever you download your podcast. Leave a 5-star review. That would help me out. And then that's it, right? Send good vibes out into the world. You will get those good vibes back. Wear your safety harness. Take care of your neighbor. All that stuff, right? Get out and hunt your balls off this weekend because, you know, or not this weekend, but because it's the October lull and no deer at all ever move during the October lull. But I'm just bullshitting with you. Get out, hunt as much as you can, hunt hard, be safe, and we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.